Hey, we're sponsored today by Decode DC, the podcast that gives you an honest look into how politics affects your life. The host of Decode DC, Jimmy Williams. I used to do some Dylan Radigan shows with this guy. He's worked for Republicans, worked for Democrats, even as a lobbyist, and he's taken all that experience and explaining how things really work inside and outside of Washington. Decode DC is a smart, surprising, and it challenges the conventional wisdom, like in their recent episode about what moving day at the White House is really like, as told by someone who lived through it. I imagine it was a bit of a nightmare this year. Check it out. I did. I think you'll love it. That's Decode DC, available on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday. Tuesday, Casual Tuesday. Wednesday, Casual Hump Day. Thursday, Casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 27th, 2016. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. In this era of the Mad King. On the program today, Cliff Schechter will be joining us to, I guess, partially review the week. If we were going to review the entire insanity this week, it would take the entire week. And then we would have to live it all over again. Frankly, I don't think I would make it. Also on the program today, has there ever been a time we needed to hear from Isabel Gillies more? I don't think so. All this and more on today's program as the commander and crazy is losing it over a crowd picture on the wall of the White House. Betsy DeVos driving huge calls to the Senate. Labor Secretary Pudzer punts again. Those top State Department departures, apocalyptic or overblown? Weird arrests of supposed spies in Russia. And the EPA head nominee cannot name one EPA regulation he supports. Not one. Democratic leadership, however, yet to show they're up to the task. And is it Bannon or Priebus running the show, and does it matter? And since it's Friday, might as well tell you the Doomsday Clocks organization issued its most dire warning since the Cold War. Ah, yes, all that. And more, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Man. I don't know what to tell you. This is exhausting, folks. I mean, I know everybody is feeling this, and we've just got to pace ourselves because it's not going to go away for some time. Now, with that said, I stopped myself from writing a tweet along these lines. Now, I suppose all the reasons why it makes sense for me to stop myself when I'm going to tweet it probably would apply to me articulating it on this show. But I don't know. I just somehow I feel like I can get away with, I feel more comfortable articulating it. But I was going to ask, like, is it, if just hypothetically, because I've been watching a lot of Trump footage over the past 24 hours. And I would have to say a healthy amount of it is the sassy Trump stuff. I don't know if people are aware of this. And you know what? We're gonna put a link to that in our newsletter. We're going to send out the newsletter this week. It's either going to go out today or tomorrow, sometime over the weekend. It is going to be a compilation of what we've seen so far for of organizations and means in which you can get involved and do something, particularly in the sort of fight Trump, fight Republicans space, you know, as opposed to like stuff around your community where you can help out other people. This is more geared towards capital P politics. And maybe what we'll include is a clip, because maybe some people aren't aware of this. But the guy who is the EP of Veep, right? Is it the same guy, or am I confused?
Armando Iannucci?
Yeah.
Who
doesn't he do the sassy?
No, that's Peter Serafinowicz does sassy Trump.
Oh, okay. All right. I got confused. Well, nevertheless, I haven't seen that guy on Twitter. I wonder if I stopped following him. I haven't seen him on. All right. So these, basically, it's just a guy who redoes Trump's speeches in a sassier voice.
He works with Simon Pegg. What's the Simon Pegg movie with the zombies? But he works with those guys a lot.
I'm just going to play well, you know what? I can't do it. Can you do it? Do the CIA one. Don't play the whole thing, but just to get a sense of it. And it's word for word, verbatim, what Trump says. But it really is like what I love about it, because you can, it's you know, it's a funny voice, but it really shows just how absurd. You can actually listen to the words that he's saying in some way and realize how incredibly absurd it is. But this is sassy Trump at the CIA.
I'm with you 1,000%. And the reason you're my first stop is that, as you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on Earth. Right? And they sort of made it sound like I had a feud with the intelligence community. And I just want to let you know the reason you're number one stop. It is exactly the opposite. Exactly, and they understand that too. Mm-hmm. And I was explaining about the numbers. We did a thing yesterday, the speech. Did everybody like the speech? You had to like it, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've been given good reviews. But we had a massive field of people. You saw that.
Okay, all right, we don't need to hear anymore. I mean, now this was he was doing this over the course of the campaign. And it was funny then. But now it just feels like literally like medication to me. Yeah. So we'll include that in the newsletter. And you can go and sign up for the newsletter on our site at majority.fm if you so wish. And so, I guess here's what my tweet was going to be. Was because he looks like he's already been in office for like 18 months. And I mean, if you look at before and after pictures of Obama, he aged quite a bit. And I'm just curious if Trump has a heart attack or a stroke. And I'm not saying I wish this on him. I'm not saying it now. But if he does, I'm just curious, this is a thought experiment. Are people going to be sympathetic? Is it going to be like 10% of the population? I mean, now, granted, there's 30% of the population, 40% of the population right now, they're very ecstatic about Trump. Still are. buddy of mine sent me a picture of a van that had a sign taped to the back of it in Florida offering to help Democrats. It was all misspelled, incidentally. Offering to help Democrats light themselves on fire or something to that effect.
It's helpful.
He's bringing people together. It's he's inspiring people to be more community service oriented. But I just wonder if he has a heart attack, if people are going to be sympathetic towards him. I mean, broadly speaking, I think no. But I imagine some, right? I mean, if he has a stroke, I saw my dog have a stroke. Now, I loved my dog. So that was, I'm obviously going to be more sympathetic with my dog. But I wonder if like we watch him have a stroke on TV. I don't know. Just something to think about. It's Friday.
Yeah, no, I've actually given this some thought. Like, if he died, would people... It would just upset people on the level... Okay, so wait, he dies in this scenario, but...
Oh, no, no. I'm just saying he's horribly crippled.
Oh.
Yeah, no. I mean, if he dies, he dies.
Well, no, if he dies, I think it would upset more people just because it's upsetting that the balance of power, and if it was not something natural that happened to him, it would be even...
Oh, yeah, no, no. I think people would be much more, because nobody wants the presidency itself attacked. No. But I'm just saying, like, if, you know, if it's an act of God, I mean,
if he's on TV,
if it's
God,
if God does it, I mean, God does it, God does it.
People are definitely going to be upset, Sam.
Right. Okay. Yeah. All right. Just curious.
I mean, I guess we could see, like, how much Dayton's support is rising because he had the stroke.
Yeah, but I think that's different.
Bit different.
I think it's different. Oh, we should say Michael's not here because he's sick. I can't say that with a straight face. No, of course he's hungover. It's not even close because he went to they did a live Two Dope Boys.
We had a live Two Dope Boys taping,
and he got too wasted, and then he writes me in the morning. I'm sick, can't come in.
It's okay.
That's fine.
He doesn't.
I mean, I told him. I said, You've misspelled. What do you write? Very sick today. I can't make it. He wrote, and I said, "You misspelled sick. It's spelled H-U-N-G-O-V-E-R. Maybe it was just his spell check." And that's it. I think he's sleeping right now. All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
Spirit bomb. Brush your teeth for bed. Blow out that cherry bomb. Blow out that cherry bomb. For me, you got to know it's on your sleeve. Know it's on your sleeve. Know it's on your sleeve.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, and even though we're living in the era of the Mad King, and our executive agencies are barred from communicating with the outside world, the authority coming from Sheriff Bannon and his henchmen does not stretch to outlawing and banning this song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter,
LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff. How are you? This is the first time that we have spoken, I guess. Well, I mean, we spoke after the inauguration, but just after the inauguration. But now we full sense of what a Trump presidency looks like.
Exactly. And of course, our predictions were way off. He's competent. He's organized. He's self-confident. I really don't know what the hell we were thinking, frankly. And we should sort of be embarrassed about that.
The thing I've been struck of is I think that he is, he may not be able to handle the pressure.
I don't think he can. And I kind of felt like we've talked about this. I mean, I don't know if we've come right out and said it that way, but you know, this has been a situation for a while, right? I mean, he has always been at his worst when he's under pressure. That is when he freaks out and he can't hold it together. Now, in some ways, it doesn't make him different than a lot of people. I mean, he acts like a bigger asshole than I think most people. But a lot of people feel at least internal turmoil when there's more pressure and that kind of thing.
Sure.
But we're usually searching for a president who can handle that kind of stuff, not one who actually gets a lot worse when the pressure's on. So, it's not good, you know? I mean, we're still here. No cities or countries at this moment have been nuked. So
that's,
you know,
right.
Thumbs up on that.
Yes.
You got to take the little things where you can. But, you know, we're entering increased rivalry with China. Quite clearly, they're not just in word, but in deed, doing everything they can to undermine the EU, as well as the UN, as well as NATO and many other. So, I mean, you know, and this is their worldview. People really shouldn't make that mistake. The thing is you'd have to get somebody so grandiose in their vision, so out of their mind, to think they could make this work. But essentially what they're hoping to do, they want to go back. Their view is basically Donald Trump is a predator in every sense of the word. We know about his personal behavior. We know about his business, predatory business behavior. And this is the foreign policy version of it, which is why form alliances and help out those that are less strong than you when you can plunder them. That's his view of the world. And who's the best to team with? Well, the other guy, big guy with nukes, who's willing to plunder. So in his view, you undermine all these organizations so basically places like the United States and Russia can get together and say, we're going to go into this country, we're going to kill them and take their oil, which he's said those kinds of things. I mean, that is his view of how international affairs should work. So if you go with that in mind, all the rest of it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, one of the things that sort of got lost in the insanity that was his talk in front of the CIA was his sort of offhand mention of complaining about, we didn't get the oil when we went into Iraq, but you may have a second chance. And we'll see where that goes. He's speaking to Putin this weekend. And then there's also, I mean, I don't want to get into this right now. I want to talk about the Democrats. But
sure.
There is just that people should be aware of. There's been three or four arrests of Russian people who work in their cyber, I guess, their cyber programs.
Intel.
Yeah, Intel, yeah. Who have been charged with being U.S. spies. And there was also another story about Rosneft, which is the a huge Russian oil company, and there's been stories out about how 19-20% of this company has been sold. Nobody knows to whom for whatever reason. They can't figure it out. And then it also just coincidentally had shown up in that 34-page dossier that Carter Page was offered 19% of Rosneft. I haven't dug into this stuff, but I just want to put a flag in that to, you know, I mean, it's so hard to sort of parse through all this and figure out, you know, what's what. But if people have, you know, ideas about that, please send us emails. But let's talk about the Democrats, because we've seen, I mean, I don't know how sustainable it is. Hopefully it is. But at least in terms of the first week, we've seen all these markers that show there's a tremendous amount of, at the very least, anti-Trump sentiment out there, and is motivating people to get involved. And
yes, part of obviously, look, the march, which happened since we last talked, was incredible. I mean, the number of people were many times what were expected. It also drove Trump crazy because it was bigger than his little party. You know, I live in a Midwestern city now of 300,000 people. We had 15,000 people out there, which is a pretty solid number.
Yeah.
Places like Chicago and you know, like that had, what, 400, 500, 300. I mean, it was you know, and that was a serious rebuke, and we've seen it since then. And there are individual people, organizations doing phenomenal things, right?
Greenpeace, Move On had something like 25,000 people on their call or something. Some absurd number. There's groups that popping up everywhere that are very much organic, completely.
Yep.
I mean, the DNC as an entity seems to be completely missing in action. Now, part of that is there's an acting head, I guess, and there's nobody there.
And they're really having the election right now for who's going to run it. And
right.
That's part of it. It doesn't change the fact that, look, yes, The energy out there is incredible. New organizations are popping up. People, you know, you see places that you never suspected, or not suspected is not the right word, but you never thought you'd see political activity from, like Merriam, you know, Webster dictionaries, you know,
right.
You know, if you don't follow them on Twitter, by the way, tweeting out things, you know, about like the meaning of facts. And stuff like that, complete sub-tweeting
right.
and screwing with Trump.
They also tweeted out Clack.
And Clack? Oh, did they?
Yeah, that was
it was Clack. That was it. It was awesome.
And Clack, you know, we should say, let me just say, Clack is, the definition of Clack is a paid group of applauders, essentially.
Right, after the CIA incident, they did that. You see about a dozen breakaway, you know, from the national parks and the EPA, who are people who are just like, they're not listening to the gag orders, and they're, I don't know if it's current employees, former employees, a combination of both, but they're tweeting out information and not listening. I mean, you see all this stuff, and you even see a couple individual members in office doing incredible things. I will tell all of you right now, if you are not following Congressman Ted Lieu on Twitter, you're missing a show. I mean, he tweets out stuff, and he makes sure in all his press releases the line about that Trump and Bannon lost the election, and you know that they lost the popular vote, and that they lie often is something that he's added to it. I mean, so you know you see it here and there, and you know what? I'll give credit where credit is due. There are some people. The one that comes to mind is Evan McMullen, who sits there tweeting at Trump about retweeting stuff constantly and pointing out how you know this is what an authoritarian does. It undermines democracy. And that's helpful because you need people across the political spectrum doing that stuff. So there is that. But, you know, I've watched, again, this is not an unusual thing for us here, the Democrats in the Senate on a whole bunch of these nominees. Kirsten Gillibrand is the only one who voted against all of them.
No, she voted for Haley, but short of Haley, oh. I think that's right.
Oh, I didn't know that. Well, then there's that. And I think actually that's a bad one because Haley, you know, when you want to look at Southern Republican governors or Republican governors, I suppose compared to Jindal or Brownback, maybe Haley did a decent job, but she doesn't know a damn thing about foreign policy.
No.
So she doesn't belong there. I mean, she's there because if you know Trump's view of the world, he looked at her and said, non-white person, foreigner, senator of the UN. Kind of like he did with Ben Carson, black guy, urban, send him to HUD, even though he knows. And therein is something because you've had a number of Democrats, including Elizabeth Warren, who voted for him.
Yep.
And here's my problem. My problem is this. I'm not even asking them to be as bad as Republicans and obstruct people. Like, there's a part of me that says, if there's people that are competent in what they do and actually will be a good influence in this administration, I want them there. So classic example would be...
Well, that's her argument. I mean,
I don't see how Carson is a good, you know, I mean, like Mattis would be my example. If I were in there, I would have voted for Mattis. Why? He believes in a two-state solution. He's going to oppose the insanity coming from our new Israeli ambassador and the stuff going on with Jerusalem. He may not get anywhere, but at least he'll be a dissenting voice. He's a dissenting voice on Russia. He believes very strongly in NATO, and has said it's one of the best partnerships in the history of the world or something of that nature. That is somebody who I don't have to agree with on everything. I want him there. So I would have voted for Mattis. But when it's Ben Carson, who knows nothing about HUD, when it's DeVos, who knows nothing about education, when it's Nikki Haley, who knows nothing about foreign policy, when it's Perry, who knows nothing about what the Energy Department even does, I just don't know how you can justify voting for them. They're not qualified. And frankly, if a Democrat nominated them, you should vote against them. It's embarrassing. They shouldn't be there.
I got to say that. And I get the argument about Mattis, but my feeling about this is that there are no Trump nominees who are going to be voted down by the Republicans. Not one. Now, it's quite possible a guy like Pudzer may drop out because he's embarrassed. This is the labor secretary nominee because he's embarrassed about the fact that it's coming out that he beat his wife or something. And I don't, I'm not using that as an example. Apparently,
the Trump people.
She dressed up and went in disguise and went on Oprah and claimed that she had been a victim of abuse.
Right. The drama never ends with these guys.
But my point is that the argument that Elizabeth Warren and Sherrod Brown made about Ben Carson was that not that he was competent, but that he answered all the questions well, and that there could be a much worse nominee put in there, which I think is probably correct. You could get someone who starts from day one. You could get a Pruitt version of a nominee. Scott Pruitt at the EPA.
Maybe. Has a picture of himself with Jesus up in his living room.
Well, I understand.
He's not what I call a model of mental stability.
No, that may be the case, but my point is that she's making that argument. I think as a matter of politics, the Democrats should not vote yes on a single nomination for anything. In fact, they should say, we're not participating in this until we see, this is not an arbitrary thing, but I think they could pick any number of things, until we see the president's tax returns. So we can get a notion as to just how conflicted he is. So we can get a notion as to, because this, as far as we know, and there's certainly evidence, right? I mean, this is not a far field.
Yep.
There's plenty of evidence that this guy is operating in a way that is going to enrich him. And so they can make a principled argument that if
and
we
it's in
don't,
violation of the Constitution,
and,
I mean,
in violation of the
really
Constitution,
up for
they
argument.
Can make a principled argument, and I'm talking about this in terms of politics, where they could say, like, look, we can't go forward on any of this stuff until he conforms with what is the norm for presidents, so we can make our decisions. Part of these, you know, approving of these nominees is to know whether or not this is just him paying off his cronies in a way of enriching himself. And
right.
He hasn't fulfilled his obligation. So the downside.
That's my first. By the way, that would be my first preference, Sam, is that we wouldn't participate in this charade to begin with. But, you know, and to make him do it. But also, how about all these nominees? Many of whom haven't shared all
Indeed.
Sorts of information.
Indeed.
So I would, yes, yeah. I mean, for them to actually do that would be my first choice. What I'm saying after that is if you're not doing that and you are actually voting on these people based on their qualifications, there's only one person so far that I can find. I suppose you could argue Kelly is qualified for HHS, although, you know, I have some real disagreements in some serious ways with him. But those are the only two I think you could even argue are qualified for their jobs that I'm looking at. You know, I think the only one I could even get, I might vote for would be Mattis, to have somebody who's sane on foreign policy next to Trump.
Yes, but he's not going, Mattis, if you don't, as a Democratic senator, if you vote against Mattis, he's still going to be the Secretary of Defense. That's my point, is that none of them
I
are going to vote.
What you're
so,
saying,
you're,
yeah.
you know, and that assessment, and the only thing, I mean.
But with the other people, I don't want to give them my endorsement. because when Carson goes ahead and I mean, that's where your vote is also, you know, as you're saying, it's part of whether you're participating in this process or not, whether you're saying this is somebody who's viable for this organization. And when the heck of a job Brownie moment comes, at HUD, because Ben Carson is asleep at the switch and there's some huge scandal that ends up hurting people and stealing money, or, you know, or with DeVos education, I would not want my name on it and to pretend that I endorse that.
Well, nobody's going to vote for DeVos. I mean, that's the thing. That's what I'm saying, is that this is also a strategy. Chuck Schumer was communicating this strategy a month ago. He was saying, we're going to pick three or four, and those are the ones we're going to vote against. And maybe, now, the only alternate narrative I have here, and so they're all going to vote against DeVos. They're all going to vote against Pruitt. They're all going to vote against Pudzer, would be my guess. Maybe you'll see Mnuchin. You'll see more people vote against Mnuchin as well. I don't know, but that is guaranteed almost. They're all going to vote against them, and then Schumer basically released everybody else on the other things. And you know, I mean, the only counter narrative I have, okay. And I don't know if this is happening. I just happened to stumble upon this. I don't know if this is happening around the country. But I know that Sheldon Adelson's group, I think it's called 45. It's a PAC that has been set up to buy ads.
Aimed to show one-third of his age?
Well, and just coincidentally, also Trump's the he's the 45th president. There, I have this somewhere, but it's... he's bought ads. He bought ads for Jeff Sessions, but he's running ads against Sherrod Brown right now, trying to stop Sherrod Brown, or I should say, encouraging Sherrod Brown to vote for Tom Price at Health and Human Services. And you know, there's not a single dollar being spent by anybody around the country against these nominees, not that I've heard of. I mean, this is it right here. So, you know, and you know as well as anybody, Brown is running for re-election, and I'm not convinced his vote for Carson wasn't a function of that, and Warren's vote wasn't cover for that.
That's the other thing. I'm really more willing to forgive in certain cases. Look, I can speak very well to Brown. I'm in this state. And it's become a more hostile atmosphere. He's by far the highest ranking Democrat we have in the state at this point. And, you know, his winning in 18 is incredibly important. And the thing about Brown is he's been so principled on so many things in the past and voted yes or no on things when it was a risk because he's from here, even as a swing state. So I'm willing to give him a little more leeway. But when I see blue state senators from places where Democrats will win by 20 and 30 points doing this, voting for some of these people, that bothers me a lot.
Well, that's why I think Warren's vote is, either they have this really wrong perspective. I mean, just politically incorrect. I mean, in terms of taking the temperature of the Trump supporters and the non-Trump supporters, because I don't think, you know, I just don't think it's going to work that way. I think Elizabeth Warren is just trying to add cover for Sherrod Brown. I mean, that's the only explanation that I could come up with is, you know, because if Sherrod Brown was out there alone, he'd be getting slaughtered. But she's out there taking a lot of the flack. I'm not convinced that's not part of it. I don't know. I have no idea. And I can't find anybody who will confirm something like that.
I think if the Senate were behaving in a different way, the problem is all this stuff adds up. Right.
Yes.
The problem is when, you know, a few members of the House rise up to question the Electoral College, not one Democratic senator is willing to join them. And it's not like anything would have changed there, but it would have been a statement. The problem is when 70 something members of the House refuse to go to the inauguration, not one Democratic senator is willing to join them.
Right.
In not going. Not any of the ones from blue states or whatever. I'm not sure what they thought they were gaining by being there. That's what happens. It bleeds into some of this, and you just feel like, my God. I mean, again, it just reminds you that you're fighting with people who always have both of their arms tied behind their backs, and it just gets sickening after a while. It gets tiring. You know, you see the way the Republicans come into office. Barack Obama has historic, margins, or at least the largest in a long time in Congress, and this wave of goodwill, and he's at a 75%, 80% approval rating, and boom, they're opposing him on everything right away.
Right.
And we come in to this guy that lost by 3 million votes and was helped in by Vladimir Putin and helped in by Comey and helped in by massive voter suppression. And there just seemed to me, there, as you brought up something great about his releasing his tax returns, there don't seem to be any strings attached to anything, to any support for this guy, no matter how illegitimate he is. And I get so frickin' tired of fighting battles that people with much bigger names and much bigger positions than I have should be fighting for me. It just gets exhausting.
And now let me just say this too, just to, so that we get a, you know, sort of make this somewhat of a nuanced perspective. Polling has shown fairly consistently that Republican voters want their representatives to be uncompromising, and that Democratic voters want their representatives to be compromising. Now,
I think in the past you are correct. I think after that show of force on last Saturday and some of the things since, I don't know. Recent polls may be saying I'm wrong too, but it feels different out there.
I know, and
a lot
and,
of people out there that don't feel like compromising with Trump. Who
that's
would
right.
Have been fine compromising with a different Republican.
I would also argue that. Part of the reason why I think we see that polling from Republicans is because largely they have been feedback loop, you know, because they have more uncompromising politicians, and people, I think, get used to that and see that it's effective and whatnot. So there's a real dearth of leadership.
Rabies.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, but there's a real dearth of leadership. And this is the big problem with Chuck Schumer. I mean, as much as I have issues with his politics in terms of like where he is ideologically, which is fairly extensive, in these type of situations, the issue is that I don't think he's particularly good at this.
I don't either.
I don't think his strategy, his first thoughts about what the strategy should be, are particularly good about this. I mean, I think they're flailing around. They're trying to, and you know, you can take a public position and then go and cozy up to Trump if the plan is in some fashion to peel Trump away from the Republicans. I mean, I get that there's almost like two different agendas and the one can cut against the other. But, you know, I mean, a guy like Trump, I think, like, if Schumer was to go, like, Donald, you know I had to say that in public. You know as much as anybody. But you and I, we can make a deal here. And you don't need Paul Ryan.
Trump would buy into that completely.
I feel like he would.
Kiss his ass in private, and he'll believe whatever the hell you want him to believe.
I think
you say nice things about him.
And I think there's just a – there just seems to be a massive failure here. And – you know,
you have all this energy that's waiting to be channeled into things, you know? It's not even waiting. It has been channeled into many things.
Well, that's the good
thing
about it, too. I mean, we're seeing an explosion of, like, of more organic, I think, grassroots groups, which is great. The only part of this that also bums me out a little bit, and I guess I might be asking too much, is that there is so much of this is anti-Trump, because Trump is a lunatic, disgusting human being in many different ways, as opposed to he is basically allowing and empowering a huge right-wing assault on many aspects of our government, if not all.
Yeah. Well, and it also has to be part of that has to be sort of, you know, which is a key part of that is in the manner, again, in which he won. I mean, as much as I'd hate it, if this is, you know, if this is Ronald Reagan 1984 and the Republicans just won by a huge margin and they're leading an assault, doesn't mean I'm not going to fight back. But I get it. Sadly, that's what my country wants. Whereas our country did not vote for this.
Right.
You know, it did not vote for him. It didn't vote. You know, there are more Democratic votes percent in the Senate overall. It's just where our country, where we've chosen to draw the lines based on a lot of old and bad crap in our history. It's how they've redrawn lines in gerrymandering. I mean, again and again. So, I mean, fundamentally, what they're doing this with isn't just not legitimate. It doesn't, I mean, we're a democracy, theoretically, or a democratic republic, and it doesn't reflect the will of the people. And so that is my problem, is that, you know, a right-wing assault is bad enough when it's backed up by all the people, with people voting in the country. But this one isn't. And that should make it a lot easier to stand up and to make a point. And that's my problem. It's that he's incompetent and a creep and a disgusting human being on one hand. He's pushing a radically right-wing agenda on another. And we shouldn't be dealing with either of those things because he didn't win.
I think that, you know, I don't know. I don't know what it's going to take in the Democrats. I have to say that the name that keeps popping up in terms of what I, you know, sort of am finding, you know, good messaging coming out is Al Franken, frankly.
He's been good, too.
He's been good. I mean, you know, hopefully, I don't know what has to change for Democrats to sort of get more, attuned to what's happening. And also, I think they have to prepare. They have to also attack Paul Ryan. They, you know, they just can't let the Republicans in the Senate and the House be sitting on the sideline, as if they have no association with the president, who is a Republican.
Right. If they were to start right now and they were to run a full out economically populist, socially libertarian campaign, you know, for the most part, with some exceptions, against a number of these guys in the Senate, you know, and make it a full 2-year affair. No, you may not have all the money for the advertising and whatever, but you can certainly start generating a lot of PR. Then who knows? 2018 might look entirely different,
right?
Because you'd find a couple of these guys might be vulnerable who aren't. You certainly would find that Heller and Flake would be even more vulnerable. Again, I think that one of the hidden things is Ted Cruz, I think, could be vulnerable if the right person ran against him, one of the Castros, somebody, I don't know, in Texas. I mean, it's a state trending away, and he's a lunatic, and all the Trump people still don't like him. You know, there's just ways you can undermine some of these guys who are up at 18, you know, and if you push populist issues and you can convince a few of the Democrats to get aboard and not be idiots, you know, if you convince your height camps and McCaskills and you know, Mansions to get aboard, I think you're looking at a different, you're looking at a whole different thing. I think you're looking at taking a bunch of House seats back too. But, you know, if you don't do that and you kind of flail around and you don't have a unified message and a narrative to explain why it is that Trump is terrible, why it is that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are right there with him, and that the Republican Party itself is screwing people, then, you know, it all becomes disjointed.
And if you have a president who is at, now, maybe something will change and he will rise from 35% to 40% in approval rating where he's at now, which is sort of just, it's mind-boggling that a president starts off this way. But, I mean, by 2018, you know, I think he's probably, it's hard for me to imagine he can possibly drop below 25%. But but
Dick Cheney did.
If he's between 25% and 30%, you know, come the August of 2018, I hope Democrats have tied Republicans around their necks. Trump around their necks, because that's how you win a midterm. You know, you can't allow
them. Let's never forget George W. Bush falling to what, 26%? I think was his total when he was on the way out of office.
Yep.
And I can tell you a number of incidents in approval ratings in different states. There have been a number of governors who've fallen to the point of 20-15%, where just everybody's sick of them. So, I mean, it's not so difficult when you break it apart and you look at the fact that all of this is very doable. It's not easy, but in a way they own everything. And if you can just tie them together and have very straightforward messaging and take them on the most unpopular issues for them, which they're trying to attack, you know, from people understanding that, wow, Obamacare actually is the Affordable Care Act and I'm going to lose my health care. to things like Medicare and other. I mean, this is all very doable. And I mean, everybody says, oh, it's over and there's no way you can win back right before it actually happens. Because I remember in 2006, nobody believed that anything could happen until it did.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's just so that's what is frustrating, because I don't see anything consistent out of Washington at this point.
Well, I mean, I guess the big question, what do you think is going to be the first big policy fight? I mean, Trump has signed these executive orders, some of which are have immediate impact, others of which are sort of more like, I resolve to do this, and all of which appear to have been written by Bannon without any consulting from the agencies that are supposed to carry this stuff out. So, I mean, half the stuff apparently appears to be inoperable.
Well, and then there's the other stuff that just is leading all sorts of people, like top State Department officials, to resign en masse.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, there was a statement put out by the Association of Foreign Service Personnel, which, you know, more or less said, this is not as much of a deal as is being put out. I mean, these are appointed posts, not necessarily career posts. And some are going to continue in foreign service and other positions. I mean, according to the Foreign Service Association, which is, I guess, their union. I mean, I don't know.
Well,
it's tough
to
know.
Talk about. Yeah, well, there's that stuff that's been reported, and I can just also say that I have having gone to a school that had an international affairs division for graduate school, I have a number of friends in the Foreign Service, and I mean, it's beyond nobody being happy. I mean, I think a lot of people right now there are a lot of people with 20, 30 years of institutional knowledge are considering alternative careers, at least while he's in control of things. So I think this is the beginning.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Is true.
I think you're right. I mean, I think it's I think we may see that in, you got to feel for a lot of these people because they have this horrible dilemma, frankly, that is. I imagine a lot of people are like, I don't want to work here anymore because it's going to be a nightmare. On the other hand, they're struggling with the idea of like, if I leave, I'm leaving it to God knows what. People work at these agencies and in these departments because they believe in their mission. And I imagine think that the mission of these departments is crucial for our society. And
yeah, I mean, you couldn't have hit the nail more on the head. I mean, I had a conversation like that with a good friend of mine just the other day that's exactly like that, because he's struggling with that right now, what to do. You know, and it's the same exact thing, which is, I'm not going to carry out some of this idiocy, but if I'm not here, then what happens? Who, you know, which knuckle dragger do they stick in here?
Right.
You know, I mean, it puts a lot of people in an incredibly difficult position. But I expect to see a lot more of it. I just, obviously, with the foreign policy stuff, it's always even more worrisome because of the stakes are bigger. But you'll see it in domestic departments, I'm sure, too, with just all, you know, big sort of groups of people leaving. Because, you know, these guys aren't here to build anything. They're here to tear everything down.
Right.
Not many people want to be around for that. Whatever. It's a mess. There's just so many pressure points here. I don't expect perfect unified leadership from Democrats in the Senate, but I expect more than what we're seeing right now.
Well, certainly,
let's put it that way.
Certainly, it helps if folks contact their senators and their representatives. And apparently, everything that I'm reading now, people are saying call. Emailing is
calling
fine, but calling is huge. Yeah.
Yep, the things that change, that are able to change things. I mean, it's not to say you email, put up Facebook posts. I'm not, tweet stuff out at them. I'm not telling people not to do that because that's all a part of it, and it's important. But having known people, who work on the Hill and everything, there's just nothing like calling and showing up. Those are your two best ways to make sure that they hear you and that maybe the press pays attention and that things get done.
And it's also not a coincidence that that involves more commitment on the individual's part. Because, that, I mean, yep. That's the way the algorithm goes.
But do it, folks. I've done it many times. It's fun calling in and having a nice conversation with Mitch McConnell's office. I can't tell you. It can turn it into a game, frankly.
Well, back in the day, during the Air America days, I would call some Senate offices and, ask, I guess it was Rick Santorum about all the, because at one point he was talking about all the sluts in Boston. So I wanted a list. We have that.
Did he
call.
Provide that?
I didn't get to speak to the senator. It was weird. They
wasn't that
put
his
me
reason,
through.
Right? For like the reason why the molestation scandal
yes,
or
yes.
something? Because there's so many sluts in Boston that
yeah.
clearly that had convinced priests to molest kids.
Yeah. Maybe we'll put out a couple of those calls. I remember calling Joe Lieberman's office and the guy going like, I know who this is. The guy working. I'm like, you do? And he goes, yeah, I listen to your radio show. We're on the same team.
He's probably listening
and I'm
while
like,
you did it.
He goes, we're on the same team. And I go, buddy, if you think we're on the same team, you're not listening to my radio show.
Is there any reason that you can think of that you couldn't, let's say, bring some of that back to the current show?
No, I mean, we can try. I think we will see probably that's probably a good idea. Do a little bit of...
All I ask is at least once that I be able to be on the line here with you.
Oh, no, I don't do it live. I don't do it live.
Okay.
Because usually what happens is you've got to tell them that you're making it for air. But I find if you say it really quickly and just keep going through... They just, I don't know, people don't, they don't hang up more often. There's times that they do.
It is amazing how people will just stay on the line with you.
Yep.
Like, they just won't hang up.
Well, there's a certain amount of pressure in these offices, right? I mean, they don't want to be, nobody wants to be the staffer who was rude.
That's right.
So, and folks, when you call in, you should also not be rude.
Absolutely.
And
be nice.
Don't
tell them that they're wrong, nicely tell them they're making a mistake, nicely tell them about a personal anecdote, somebody you know who's being hurt by something that their boss is contemplating doing. Do it that way. If you just call and you say F you, you're not going to get anywhere.
Right. And so.
Also, I'd be careful about actually going there for some people.
What?
To the office. Cliff suggested that.
Oh, no, you go to town meetings.
Oh, okay.
When the representatives has meetings where they visit people, you go. You can call
right.
the office,
exactly.
Find out when is the congressman or congresswoman or senator, when are they meeting with constituents? And you get the date.
Right, because the
and
thing
then
is they have to still keep trying to do that. They want to put a face on that they're representing people. So what you do is you find out where it is. For example, my district here, we're gerrymandered to hell. So we've got this right-wing, just nothing burger, Brad Wenstrup, who just votes for whatever they tell him to vote for. And he had a coffee thing, and the place was overrun. And 90% of the questions were to ask him. People were very polite about it. But it would go to them, and they'd say, well, why are you trying to take our health care away? Or why are you trying to, guess what ended up happening? It was all over our TV news.
Yeah.
These are things that will make their lives harder. People forget how much of politics, how many of these guys are incredibly lazy. They work like 3 days a week, right? They expect everybody else in the country to work hard. They don't. And if you can make their lives just somewhat more difficult, then sometimes that works. You may convince some of them to not run for Congress again.
Everybody knows this at their own job anyways, right? I mean,
right.
It's the exact same thing. Like, I'm going to follow the path of least resistance when I can. And
that's right.
That's what people do. So, all right, Cliff. Well, I'm glad
always
we figured.
A pleasure,
I'm glad we figured this out.
Yeah, we got the whole world figured out now.
Hopefully,
folks, it should all be done by next week.
Hopefully, Trump has not launched the nukes during this conversation.
Well, but, maybe we should end every week by wishing each other well.
Yes.
In case I don't talk to any of you or see any of you ever again, I'd like to wish you all well and, thank you for your support and listening and. Just being there.
Oh, and let me remind people that you are launching a podcast of your own.
It is
called Unprecedented and Bigly, and people can go and help make that a reality by going to your GoFundMe page. People can just Google Cliff Schechter GoFundMe, and that's the way that I get there. So people, please.
Just about 40% of the way there, guys. We're getting there.
I love it.
I want to start this thing, so any help you can give would be awesome. And if we're not nuked by next week, you know, I'll give you an update then.
All right, great. Thanks, Cliff. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Boop, boop. What? Are you freaking out now? Yeah.
No.
He wasn't serious about the nuking. That's probably not going to be until late February.
Not yet, yeah.
Oh, no, I took my headphone off for a second, and I wondered why we were never going to see him again.
Yeah, well, we don't know. I haven't looked at the news in an hour and a half. God knows what could have happened. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back.
Before the break, Kelly? I would just like to encourage everyone.
Oh, we got a Jim Reef Cake song, too? Okay, what?
I would just like to encourage everyone to try out the Super Chat on our YouTube channel.
Is that a real thing? Super Chat?
Yeah, no, it's being beta tested by YouTube. We're one of only six channels that has it right now, and you can donate money to us. People have asked if we get a big cut of it, and we do. And
do we get a big cut of it?
Yeah.
All right.
And you can, if you post if you donate $5 to us, then your comment gets posted to the top.
So it's like Citizens United, basically. Yep. If you have more money, you get a louder voice in the chat.
Just such
I don't know for how much I like it.
Right. But also, you are contributing to, you're supporting us, which we're not evil or anything. So.
And you are you going to start reading one of those? Is that what the whole deal was?
Yeah, we're still like working out exactly.
But I think we had like a $20 one yesterday. Or something,
we've actually
so we should
really
mention those.
We should
gotten
we should dip that one in amber.
I know.
All right. Well, in the fun half, we'll read off some of the super chats. But in the meantime, we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake as we will load up the. The phone, and I'll get Isabel on the phone. What is the song?
Home of the Deranged.
Home of the Deranged.
Now Jimmy told me, since I was a hypocrite, I could put my songs on his website at allhypocrisy.com. So here we go. I'm gonna try, because I come honest with my hypocrisy. So here's my first song called Home of the Deranged. And I don't think it's wrong to be deranged. It's a different kind of thinking. Oh, give me a home where the white man can roam, where the dark folk have all been chased away, where seldom is heard a bipartisan word, and the Tea Party Republicans reign. Home of the deranged, where the winners are Trump and LePage, where seldom is heard a bisexual word, and the bathrooms will be cleansed of all the gays. Young white women at night, once with their legs crossed tight, till G-Money, shifty and smoothie, came to town. Now they've all gone insane on heroin and cocaine. That's why all your grandchildren are brown. Come on, sing with me. Home of the deranged, where the winners are Trump and LePage, where seldom is heard a bisexual word, and the bathrooms are cleansed. Yes, the bathrooms are cleansed. Oh, the bathrooms are cleansed of the gays.
Wow, there's Jimmy Reefer Cake, Home of the Deranged. Yeah, it was. It's certainly captures the moment in many, many senses. Some of the lyrics I couldn't quite at. But, you know, I'll tell you what Jimmy Reefer Cake song, the lyrics I can understand. It is this one.
Today is Casual Friday. Let us welcome Isabel Gillies to the show. She's going to recommend a movie or two to watch on Netflix. It's the only way I know.
Listen to the picks from Isabel.
IsabelGillies.com.
Whee!
I totally get that song. That song is completely straightforward. Isabel!
Aloha. I have a quick question. Is Jimmy Reefer Cake from Maine?
Yes.
Oh.
That's why he's so Lepage-centric.
That's right. I just tuned into that on that song.
There you go.
Paige is the worst.
The worst.
Woo!
And your folks live up there, right?
Yeah. There, you know what their sign was at the march in Augusta? It was either prepare or
no me gusta.
No, it was something. It was like ready. Oh, like ready. Get ready for. Ready yourself for. I have to look at the picture. In fact, I'll do that right now so I get it right because it was good.
Now, did you go down to D.C.?
So proud of it. He was like, you know what ours was? It wasn't about Trump. It was, build for 2018-2020. That was their sign.
All right.
Because he's like, we got to get LePage out of there. He's like, I don't want to talk about, you know, what's happening now. I want to talk about 2018-2020. Got to mobilize.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, it's definitely important.
Yeah.
Now, did you go down to D.C.?
We sure did. Went down to D.C.
And the whole family?
No. Only our youngest, the 12-year-old, went. And I went.
What do you do? Are you going through? You keep going in and out of like some type of old screen porch somewhere?
I was going in and out of a door, and it was a little squeaky.
Yeah, what's going on? Are you? It's like one of those like screen door porches. Am I talking to you like in some?
We need to get the WD-40 out.
All right, so you went down there with the youngest.
We went down. We got a bus, a group of us, and. There were 36 seats on the bus, so we hashtagged ourselves 36 strong.
Okay, I like it.
And I was in charge of the food, and my friend Katie was in charge of, like, everything else.
Wait, you were in charge of food for 36 people?
Well, I was in charge of the breakfast. There were three of us that were organizing it. I was the third wheel organizer. So
okay.
Katie was the big organizer. And then my other friend Allie, and then I was. So I don't want to take a lot of credit, but I did organize breakfast because we left at 5.
I see. Okay.
In the morning.
Right. And what
so
was
I, we thought?
What did you have for breakfast?
Egg sandwiches.
All right. Very nice.
And bagels, you know. So we went down, and I went with Thomas, which was a wonderful thing. It was wonderful. It was an amazing experience. We couldn't even get on the mall.
Yes. Nikki and Myla had the same experience. They couldn't even get to where the rally was. There were so many people.
We saw the rally, but we couldn't get to the... Then when we left the rally area, we couldn't get to the mall. And I kept saying to Thomas, I was like, this isn't... When you march, it's like usually you're on the mall, and we've been there before, but it's empty, so it's so hard to picture when it's... Because it was like being on the most crowded subway for 5 hours.
Right.
Standing up. You know how you couldn't fall down because there were people right next to you for so long. And then...
How did he do with it?
he was fantastic.
Every report I've heard of a kid going down there, everybody has been like, the kid was as good as I've ever experienced. Like, I think Mila had like 5 minutes
better.
Yeah.
With him there. He's taller than me. So I would have felt safer and better and like more, you know, on it with him there. And he was just, his sign said power to the peaceful. And he chose it himself, and he marched stoically. I was so proud of him and so proud that to be able to take him, and so he could see it, and so proud of everyone around us. And so and all the discussion around the march was rich and on point, and it was just I loved hearing that we kept calling out the numbers of all the different cities and how many people were in every different city we could get, you know, whatever from Twitter. And it was just, it was quite amazing.
Hmm.
Really.
And headed back that night.
So
now what?
We decided that our bus decided to, I'm just going to do the squeaky door one more time. Well, I was just interested listening to Cliff because I was making calls, and you thought it was fun calling these offices. I get very nervous when I'm about to call and feel like I better really make my point. Like I called about DeVos a lot, and I got very nervous that I wasn't going to say the right thing, or I wasn't going to say a strong enough thing or a clear enough message. Does anybody else have that experience?
I have a solution for you. There's something called fivecalls.org that has scripts and everything on a whole bunch of different issues that I've been telling people to go to. And that way it's just kind of like phone banking. You don't have to even worry about it.
Oh, that is good because I tried to even write down my own little script.
Well, it's good to use a derivation of, but I mean, look, the bottom line is they're not, I mean, and it's been, 30 years more since I was like, you know, working, I was an intern at one of these congressional offices. And so mm-hmm. I would take a lot of those calls, and they do have an algorithm. You know, every time you call, you're put into a ledger, and the only distinction, and I don't know if we would make it with calls, but we certainly would with letters. The only distinction we made was, is this a formalized letter or an individual letter? So try and make it as like your own as possible.
Well, I could see how that would make sense, you know, because then you don't discount it as like, oh, this is just a...
Right. I mean, it you know, the whole thing is they're trying to measure in some fashion how much real energy is out there. And every touch they have with the public represents that many more people. And so if it's an email, it may represent 4 people. If it's a phone call, it may represent 30 people.
I see.
And so they have an algorithm. I don't know what it is at this point, but at the time we did. I mean, that, you know, I was told, like, you know, I wasn't in charge of any of that. I was just the lackey in the corner. My
taking
job.
The calls. But let me ask you then a follow-up question. If all these governors and senators and Congress people need to hear from their constituents, and there has been a worldwide march that had millions of people in it, is that not counted in some way? Can't they be like, oh, well, clearly these things aren't going to roll with all these people? Or does it have to be really, really your... I mean...
It's specific. I mean, none of them... I mean, broadly speaking, the Republicans do this a little more than the Democrats, but none of them think beyond their own fortunes. And none of them think beyond 5 feet in front of them in terms of their own fortunes. So, you know, they're not taking
the
long...
Sorry to interrupt you, but that is why, because with all these, frankly, horrors that have come out in the last 3 days, why aren't people quitting? Why don't you see, you know, why isn't his kids, why don't people working at the banks around him say, you know what, I actually quit. Why don't we see droves of people quitting? I just heard about someone who joined the administration. I don't understand. I can't understand it. I can't, especially with the EPA stuff. Is it really just your bank account? Because the scientists are saying this to us so clearly.
Who's gonna quit? I mean, the thing is that some of those scientists are probably sitting there going, I mean, and that you know, Cliff and I were talking about that. You know, if you're a scientist at the EPA, you got to be saying to yourself, this is going to be a nightmare. I don't want to be here. But at the same time, right. You got to be saying, like, if I'm not here, you know,
what's going to happen?
Yeah, what's going to happen? I could be here and I might be able to, like, you know, in 6 months, tell the world that, hey, look, these guys are suppressing the lead levels in Flint or whatever it is.
Right, they will.
I mean,
here's the other thing, and I'll get it back to the family. You know, with the whole Muslim ban and all the immigration stuff, friends of mine are getting so ripped apart on Twitter for their the more famous they are, the more they get just brutalized on Twitter. So
for their Islamophobic comments?
No, for speaking out. Okay, what are you talking about?
Oh, I was being facetious. Oh, they're getting brutalized by Trump supporters.
Yes, and like, I mean, really bad. And like a friend of mine was, who I guess it's on, I can say because it's, I just read about it. Got Deborah Messing did a solidarity selfie for the I'm with the immigration. All the, there
right.
was a sort of movement. It was like a online march. Did you see that?
I didn't, but continue.
Well, anyway, someone said she should be her. You know. Her genitals should be mutilated. I mean, it's like really, so I'm kind of getting freaked about people tweeting and,
well, you know what the genitals mutilated thing is about. You know why that is, right? Because it both attacks a woman for being a woman. And then also they imply that they are being protective of women against Muslims because they, you know, because Sam Harris and the Zacolites and all the lunatics, you know, are paint Muslims with a rather broad brush and are quite convinced that only female genitalia, I mean, the only genital mutilation happens in Muslim countries.
In Muslim countries. Well, it's just heartbreakingly sad that you can't say, you know, refugees and be in danger of someone saying that your genitals
but
should be,
you know, here's the thing, the reason why it's necessary for people like her and others to say that is because of that is the reaction they're going to get, right? Like, I mean, if you could come out and say I stand in solidarity with these people and no one would attack you, there wouldn't be as compelling and urgent need for that solidarity. Do you know what I'm
right.
saying? I mean, that is...
So you just have to keep going. Keep
that
resisting.
Is proof of how important it is. Because...
Right. That's a good point.
I mean...
Yeah, you can't even be on a podcast or a YouTube show without people saying you should kill yourself sometimes.
Right.
So...
It's...
Yeah, so people like Deborah Messing and everyone else.
But I think it's good. I'm really encouraged by how much more it seems to me, and I am less, I think, sort of aware of like who celebrities are today, frankly. But I'm very encouraged at the number of people who are speaking out. I mean, you know, I was just telling this to Matt that when I was at Air America in 2004. You know, many people would accuse me of having Bush derangement syndrome because, you know, it was the people who were in opposition were in the minority, really, in many respects, at least in terms of like what the ratings were. And now if someone says like, you've got Trump derangement syndrome, that actually sounds like a disease you could catch. Like, you know, if you got bit by a raccoon or something, that you could actually be as crazy as him.
Rihanna actually went to the Trump Tower protest, which Rihanna is...
The other night? 2 nights ago?
See, that's what I mean. I have no, like, no idea ago. Who Rihanna is.
Okay, Rihanna is extremely famous. No? And
no, she's so famous.
Yeah, I mean, she had bodyguards and
singer?
Stuff, but she was just dressed
singer.
Down.
Can
yeah,
she's
see her?
A, she's a singer.
Okay.
Yeah. Is that her?
Yeah.
What?
I don't know, but she had bodyguards, but she dressed down and put a ball cap on and was just protesting with everyone else.
That's what I do.
So
I dressed down.
I saw Katy Perry.
I know who Katy Perry is. I mean, that's because of Milo.
I saw her. I saw her, and so did Thomas, but Thomas it was not as
was
Thomas
it,
also saw.
Was it your fight song? Isn't that
I
one of
would
Katy
have
Perry
sung
songs?
The fight song with her. But yeah, she does the fight song.
I just
this
know
is
that.
My
yeah.
fight song. Yeah,
so, and
so I guess, oh, family. I was just about to say something about the family. I don't know. I lost it. Oh, I know what I was going to say. We are once again, you know, we kind of drifted away from being, fearful, in the last 8 years, even though maybe we should have been, but we're having a family meeting about, okay, you know, my kid goes to school near Times Square. So yesterday I was like, all right, listen, which way do you run? You know, if there's a big disaster, you know, where do you run? He was like, to the river. I was like, right. Okay. That's right. I mean, we're like in that mode, because how on earth do you say all the things that you say as president and not expect that there is going to be we're going to get smacked for it.
I mean, it's not.
And New York is going to get smacked for it because that's where his family is. That's where he's from. That's where this, you know, it's a financial center and a center of all liberalism. And he's from here and his kid is here. And they're going to, I actually am not, you know, I was laughing with my friend that we had, you know, rubber boats under our beds. But really?
Well, I mean, it's not irrational to assume that, there are going to be people out there who are going to attempt to test and goad Donald Trump into some type of war. And it's not, I mean, you can get the guy to almost like, you can't quite get him to invade a country based on a tweet, but I'm also not convinced that the right tweet has landed yet on his doorstep that to really test that scenario out. But I share that same, you know, sense that there is the world. I mean, look, and I don't know how accurate the doomsday clock is, but those folks, put it closer to high noon, essentially, because, Donald Trump makes the world a lot less stable in many respects. And frankly, it's not clear to me that his chief advisor isn't the agenda. All right, so let me ask you this. What now you are really plugged into the literati, Isabel. I mean, I don't think anybody has any doubt about that. What are they saying? What conversations are you hearing from some of the top reporters in the country as to what they're going to do, how they're going to try and cover this stuff?
Well, I hear a lot of the same kind of things that we're saying. A lot of like, I can't believe this is happening. What's, you know, a lot of that. I haven't heard like specifically how they're going to deal with, you know, the media shutting its mouth. But I know that a lot of money is being directed towards places like ProPublica and the organization to protect journalism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm spacing what the name is right now. And galvanizing, I think, but I don't know exactly how they're dealing with covering. Like, I know Michael Grimbaum had an article today, and he's a great reporter of the New York Times, and he's just like a guy like us. You know, he's like, he's younger than us. But he's just, I sort of don't know how, it's an interesting question, how those journalists are, it's like a puzzle. Like, how am I going to get, but one more than that, who's reading it? Who's listening? Who is listening to all of the, who said that the other day? Some other journalist said, you know, they're all just listening to the state TV Fox. They're not even, you could put as many things as you want on the cover of the New York Times and no one's reading it.
Weird. Yeah, I know that's true. But I mean, the people who are reading it, I think, are, you know, the idea is, right, is the people who are reading it are going out and, I guess somebody's trying to call me. It's weird.
Who's trying to call you?
I don't know, but I'm going to block them.
John Miller?
I don't know who it was. John Woo? Who?
John Miller?
A lot of people are wrong.
Sam, it's too. John Miller. I'm not crazy. I mean, Mr. Trump's not crazy. Everybody knows that.
But, like, look at David Muir the other night. You told me to watch that, and I watched it in its entirety last night.
It's insane, right?
Everyone just looks kind of...
shell-shocked.
Shell-shocked. Like, they don't know what to do.
I mean, I think at one point people are going to figure it out, or it's just going to be... I mean, because... nobody ever contemplated the idea that a full-on total lunatic could be the president. Everybody just assumes like, oh, it's just people with some type of disorder and megalomania. I mean, that's run-of-the-mill, of course. Those are the type of people that you get as leaders. But, you know,
but
the full-on mad king, right? I mean,
yeah,
this is,
well,
like...
there's a very top journalist who said he's not going to do, you know, said personally to us, he's not going to do the things that you think... that we all think he's going to do. He's going to get in office and actually not do them. So that was wrong.
Yeah, it's absolutely
this week
wrong.
Proves that that's wrong.
Yes. That to me just, the idea that people thought that, like, he's actually a different guy. I just don't think that's the case. I mean, you see, you know.
I kind of was hoping that that was true. But then look at this DeVos. Betsy DeVos puts me over the edge more than almost anybody in this whole clown show. She, I did you watch her hearings?
Of course.
I've been tweeting about it like crazy. I can't take it. And when does she get, when do we find out if she gets in? If she gets in,
Well, here's the thing though, Isabel. Ted Cruz would have appointed Betsy DeVos. Betsy DeVos, I mean, 90% of these people are basically exactly who any other Republican president would pick, because... the truth is that
Donald
Trump was like, I've got a whole dossier of people I've wanted to staff the government for years that I've been researching. No, it's Mike Pence puts a couple of names on the table and he goes, oh, she's a billionaire. Bingo.
Go ahead.
And
that's
so
right.
That's
there's no
the,
careful selection here.
Well, it's not a question of careful selection. The point is that this is the Republican Party. I mean, that's the one thing that I sort of lament a little bit, is that there's this sense that there's a conflation between what is Trump and what, or I should say, a confusion between that manifests itself in the sense that what is Trump is not Republican. Like, the parts of Trump that are unique are the fact that he's staffing much of his government with total incompetence, that he's a narcissist who is determined to prove that there was more people at his inauguration than the black guys. That's pure Trump. But everything that we're seeing on the governmental side is Republicanism. And that's what I think. That's what I get a little frustrated about right now. That's my what I've been getting frustrated about over the past, I don't know, 24 hours, just because I feel like I should change it up.
Here's the thing. Here's another thing that someone said to me that I thought was sort of interesting, that these people were there, just like you're saying, right? And the governmental side, these people were there, like, messing it up, just under the surface, just sabotaging anything that Obama did, anything that, you know, any movement towards health care or, you know, getting immigration figured out. They would just spoil it. So now they're in office, and they're not going to be messing up the agenda. Well, they are messing up the agendas, but the initiatives that people want to make can be made in the future, perhaps, because they are in there and like flying their freak flags, and everybody's going to see them out in the open. See what I'm saying? Am I being clear or not really?
I'm not 100% sure what you're saying. I mean, part of it is just their agenda is the same. We want to prevent government from serving the broad spectrum of people.
Right.
And that's where the consistency is. So, I mean, you know, tell your friends. What movie should we watch this weekend?
Well, I have TV, movie, and book.
Wow.
Because
it's going to be a busy weekend.
Yeah. Well, because you might want to just pick your poison.
All hands on deck, indeed.
If you're feeling that you need to really immerse yourself in something that's longer than 2 hours, so we're talking about a book. If you have...
Well, I thought you were about to suggest Shoah as a way of cheering people up.
I'm not... you know I love an epic.
Right. I know, of course.
I love all those big epic, you know. Okay. But no, I read... All the Light We Cannot See.
All the Light We Cannot See. Oh, you just piqued Matt Leck's interest. So, I mean, if you can if you can pique Matt Leck's interest on something,
that's on my list. That sounds like a good book.
Dudesses, it is so beautiful, and it's about Second World War.
All the Light We Cannot See.
Yeah, and it is won the Pulitzer Prize. And it's been around for a while. I mean, not like...
I've never even heard of it.
You've never even heard of it. So it's a huge, huge bestseller.
I didn't know who Rihanna was. So, I mean, what are you going to do?
Yeah, that's right. You don't know Rihanna. It's by Anthony Doerr. D-O-E-R-R. Is that how you do it?
That name sounds familiar to me. But yeah, okay.
And it came out 2014. And it is beautiful. It happens to be the same editor that I had for my first book, and weirdly I could like kind of feel her editing. It's so beautiful and it's so good, and it is, but it is a lot. It's because it's about a dictator, right? Because we're in France, but it's during the Second World War. So if you want to keep your mind, like your mind can't really leave where we are politically right now, but you want to escape and get some historic reference and literary kind of slant, go do yourself a favor, buy the book and sink into it. It's long. It's like a 400, 500 page book. So, but I would read it 4 hours at a time over Christmas.
All the Light.
Beautiful. We Cannot See.
And if that's
not the greatest title you ever heard, I don't know. And they're also wonderful if you're interested in the natural world. It's so good. Oh, I hope if anybody does read it or starts, please tweet me and we can discuss.
All right. So there's the book.
Then I'll go over to the TV, to Netflix and PBS, which you can both get.
Okay.
And I will go and recommend both The Crown.
The Crown.
Which is about Elizabeth II.
I've been enjoying that as well. I'm
Isn't
only about
good?
Four episodes in. Yes, I really like it.
Okay.
It's so good. And Victoria.
Victoria. Is that also?
Which is about Queen Victoria.
Okay.
So I'm doing a double queen.
The Crown?
And
Victoria?
Here's what's fun about that. It's, and, you know, this isn't like going to, I feel that there's a lot, just reading Twitter and watching the news and reading newspapers and listening to podcasts and stuff gets your blood boiling so hard that it's probably not good for you.
Yeah.
And there's something about this it's also historic. It's lilting. The costumes are beautiful. They're calm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's about ruling, but it's calm.
Okay.
A little romance. And it's just kind of like, okay, and there's a series, it's a series. So this is a break. It's like a break from what's happening, but still connected in some way. Cause you don't just want to totally, you know, disconnect. Cause you can't, I can't unplug, but I'm trying to a little bit.
Yes.
And then movie.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The movie's in the real theater. Can I say it?
Yeah, you can say it.
Lion.
What? Never even heard of it.
Lion.
Lion. Okay.
Lion. It's a movie with Dev Patel and Nicole Kidman. And it's about a little boy who gets lost in India. And then he gets...
A lion saves him?
No.
Okay. He gets eaten by a lion.
It is so beautiful. And my oldest kid yesterday had his last exam, his first real exams. And that's another thing. This DeVos, 90% of the children in the United States are educated in public schools.
Yeah, she doesn't like public schools.
Yeah, that's like saying, oh, I don't like water, which I guess they're saying too. Or I don't like.
Well, they're just saying
that
we should divert. We don't like public access to water. That's all.
We don't like, right. We don't like public transportation.
Mm-hmm.
So
they say
it's
that.
It's just limousines for people, I guess.
Well,
that's what
republicanism is, Isabel. That's what republicanism is.
Well, I hate Republicans.
Okay, good. I'm glad we got there. That's all I've been waiting for.
I can't stand it that people. It's the same thing as gay marriage. What does it matter to you? What does it matter to you? So you don't have to. So send your kid to a private school if you make so much money you can do that.
Well,
go for it.
For her, it's a lot of there's a huge amount of Jesus juice in this.
Oh,
she believes
gracious.
She believes that that God needs public money.
Charter schools?
No, she's really. I think the charter schools for her are a bank shot. I think her primary thing is vouchers for parochial schools. But I think she buys into the charter schools because that begins to diminish the power of public schools too.
She wants to create
religion in there.
A kingdom of God. She thinks the kingdom of God will be created by using the school system. So
I will say this. The kingdom of God's not going to be created unless you use the school system. So she may be right in that respect. I don't know if the kingdom of God's going to come, but if it is, you're definitely going to need the schools. Unless you can do some, one hell of a magic trick at the beginning of this whole thing and just float up with you leave your shoes on the Mount Zion or whatever it will be.
It's like we went from, the 10 weeks ago or right before election, everything being like, oh, this is kind of, the world. Like, how are we going to figure it out? It's a puzzle. Everybody's shifting around. Everybody's going to figure out carefully where they're going to put their piece so that we can all kind of make the puzzle together to total chaos. I mean, is there going to be a revolution? It's chaos. That's I feel like this is insanity.
Yeah.
Who doesn't feel like it's insane? That's what I want on the phone. I want someone who's like, what are you talking about? I've never felt so safe in my life.
We could probably get a call like that. That's not inconceivable.
And then what would we say? Let's pretend. Hi, I don't know what you're talking about. I feel very safe.
Well, you're insane. Click.
It's one thing. It's a wall. Okay, you're a wall person, Republican. All right. Well, but you gotta agree that the environment is kind of important. No.
Yeah.
Like, how are they across the board?
That's Chinese hoax. Chinese hoax. Nice try, Isabel.
What?
Nice try to get me on a... nice try. Nice try. Isabel?
No, it's a bad note to end on.
No, it isn't. It's just basically the notes that we have right now. They're going to get better.
That's true. That's
Maybe.
True. What could make it better? That people got on the phone, called, and then... The people in power said, all right, you know what? We're hearing the people, and it really moves, and democracy works. That would be good, right?
That could happen. Also, there's like cholesterol, which builds up in different people's arteries, and maybe it strikes them. You know, one never knows. Just saying, anything could happen. So next week, and next time we talk, Isabel, we could be talking about what a shame. Boy, it's very awkward to watch the president have a stroke, or who knows? I mean, who knows? Who knows? What?
Only mention stuff like that it, like one time. At
I just,
most,
I just, I can't help it. That's podcasting. Just what occurs to me when I see.
I know you can't do that because, you know, what I'm going to do. I'm going to tweet a picture of myself with the book "All the Light We Cannot See" because it is humanity and the arts and writing and that kind of, you know, input into the world might help in some way. So I'm going to tweet Indeed. That so people can see what the cover is. It's a very beautiful cover, and a lot of times I judge a book by their cover.
Read a book. Well, that's certainly what the editors. That's what it's my experience with the publishers. That's the only thing they care about.
The
Isabel.
Cover?
Yep. And your platform. Isabel Gillies. Always a pleasure.
I'm taking a selfie right now on the phone so everybody can know.
All right.
Okay.
Bye, Isabel. Hang in there. We'll talk
Bye.
To you soon.
Bye. Love everybody. Bye. Bye. Bye.
Isabel Gillies, ladies and gentlemen. Follow her on Twitter. Look at her picture. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half of the program. We got a bunch of sound to cover. And we have the source of the of Donald Trump's belief that there are 3 to 4 million votes that are illegal. He cited that the other day. We have more of that ABC interview with President-elect Donald Trump, as he outlines what his vision is going to be for an American Revolution. This is where he really points out that the photos show that there was a lot of people at his inauguration. And then we have sound of Mr. Trump with Sean Hannity in the Oval Office. It all just sounds like a joke. In the real Oval Office, not in Beck's fake facsimile of the Oval Office.
Trump should send the feds in to go break that down, actually. That
would be awesome. More people talking about Donald Trump being insane. And, we got other stuff. All right, folks, don't forget, it is your... membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. We'll be right back with the fun half.